Hi, I'm David Fettis, and this talk is about the Bible verse, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he is old, he will not depart from it. We're going to look at that verse from a couple of angles, relating it to sociology. In the first place, that verse has some things in common with sociology, in that it's a general observation about how things go most of the time based on how you look at what's happening in a society. And in the second place, we're going to look at what social research actually finds about factors in bringing up children as it relates to their faith life and their religious life. Train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he will not depart from it. It's one of the best-known verses of the Bible and one of the most frequently misunderstood. Some people take this verse as something that applies to all situations of parenting, that it is an absolute promise and a sure guarantee that if you bring children up right, they will turn out right. And there is no consideration of other factors that might be involved. But we need to ask, what situation does this address? Is it a promise, a sure guarantee? And are there some background assumptions which, if those assumptions don't hold true, then the verse might not fully apply either? Well, the situation is that this verse is written for a particular purpose. It is written to encourage parents of young children to train them well. It is not written as a club to beat up on parents whose children did not turn out well. So you need to understand the situation that a Bible verse is given to address what it's trying to achieve and who it's trying to speak to. And we would misuse it if in the aftermath of a child going wrong, we take them, well, train up a child the way he should go, and when he's old, he will not depart from it. Simple logic is, he departed and you didn't train him right, or something went wrong, or something was really bad with you as parents. That's not the situation, and that's not how the verse is primarily to be used. Also, this verse is not a universal guarantee. It's a generalization. It's doing what sociology tends to do, to give a generalization that doesn't apply in all circumstances, but it's true most of the time. And the generalization is good childhood training tends to produce a good adult. That's generally true, but not always and universally true, and it's not a guarantee. Other proverbs are kind of like that. It says, oh, if you're lazy, you're going to end up poor. But there are lazy bones who end up rich. But most of the time, they don't. It says if you are bad with money, you end up poor. If you try to get rich quick, you're going to end up in poverty. Well, there are a few people who do succeed with get-rich-quick schemes, but most of the time, they don't. So in that sense, Proverbs is a lot like social research. And in fact, Proverbs is almost a brand of social research. The author Cervantes said that a proverb is a short statement based on long experience. And in that sense, it's like sociology. It's observing a lot of things that have happened and then forming some generalizations based on what you've seen. And the generalization is, yeah, most of the time kids turn out a lot like their parents, and that is true. There are also assumptions embedded in train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he will not depart from it. One is that a child is teachable, because Proverbs also speaks to children who are mockers or scoffers or fools, and they are unteachable. They won't listen to their own mother, their own father, and things don't go well for them. Another assumption is that the child is influenced primarily by the parents and doesn't allow other bad influences to get control. And so Proverbs says, don't go along with evil gangs who try to get you to do violent things. Don't let too much alcohol get control of you. Don't fall into the wrong kind of relationship with the wrong person of the opposite sex, or it could wreck your life. And there are other proverbs that speak of influences that can damage you. So the assumption of train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old he will not depart from it, is you're not going to let all those other influences predominate over the influence of parents. And again, the generalization is true that if other influences aren't taking over a kid's life, then the kid is going to turn out to be a lot like mom and dad. So that's just some background on how to properly understand the proverb of training up a child and to handle it properly rather than taking it as an ironclad guarantee that comes true no matter what. It's like a sociological observation. Here's what happens most of the time. And now let's just turn to the sociologists and ask a sociologist, a major sociologist of religion, what actually happens in training that makes children hold on to faith. What are the main factors measured in teens that are linked with higher religiousness when they become young adults? And this is based on the hugest research project ever done in the lives of teens and adults. And it was done when a whole bunch, thousands and thousands of young people were teenagers, and then the very same young people were contacted like 5 to 8 years later in another survey when they had become young adults to find out if they were still people of faith and what their religious practices were. So this is a huge survey, and not just a one-time survey, but it's longitudinal in the sense that it looks at different points in time. And so it's very helpful to say, well, what was going on in their teen years, and what are some of the socially measurable factors that later on meant they were still, most of the time, people of faith or not in their young adult years? Here are some of the factors in the survey that they found had a huge impact. Strong commitment of parents to faith and regular church attendance. That was huge in whether people as teens turned out to be committed as adults. What were their parents like? Was the person as a teen involved in frequent prayer and Bible reading at home, but also personally? Those who prayed regularly and read the Bible regularly as teens were still people of faith as adults. How important is your faith for your daily life? The answer to that question, as teens, revealed a lot about whether they continued to be people of faith as young adults. Do you have lots of doubts during your teen years? And teens were asked about their doubts. And those who had very few doubts still tended to be people of faith as adults. There were also people who had many doubts who remained people of faith if there were other important factors that were in place. And then commitment to God already as a child. Did you make a commitment to God as a child? And have you had spiritual experiences, answers to prayer, just experiences where God seemed very real to you? These also had a very major impact on whether somebody still was a person of faith and religiously involved as an adult. When you had some of these factors in combination, then they were especially powerful. If a teen was surveyed and they were in the top 25% in four factors, then those teens had an 85% chance of being in the highest category of religion as an emerging adult. If you lacked all four of these factors, you had less than half of a percent of being in the highest category of religion as an emerging adult. And those four factors were the religion of your parents. Did they worship and were they committed? Did you pray and read the Bible as a teen? And was your faith important for your daily life? If your answer as a teen was yes to those four questions, then you had an 85% chance of being in the most highly committed category as an adult. If none of those were there, there was almost no chance that you would have a high level of religious commitment as an adult. There were other factors that were studied by the sociologists because they wanted to find out. They weren't sure which factors were the most important, so they asked about a lot of things. And we pointed to the things that were most important, or at least the factors that had the highest correlation between commitment as an adult. Here are some that had not huge impact, but some impact. Were there others beside their parents who were supportive of faith in their lives? If you had, the more the better. If you had, let's say, coaches or friends, adult friends that you talked with regularly, and they were committed to, that had some impact on whether you were likely to be a believer. Did you believe in miracles as a teen? If you already had a belief in the supernatural as a teen, that had some major impact. Were you sexually chaste as a teen? that had some impact, not as much as some of the others, because there are teens who have sinned sexually who remain Christians. And so this was a factor, but not one of the hugest as to whether their faith remained. Were you made fun of by your peers for your faith? This is an interesting one. Those who were made fun of more often were more likely to remain committed as adults. It may mean that as teens already, their faith was strong and stood out, and they got picked on a little bit for it. Or it may mean that the persecution itself tested and toughened their faith. But anyway, the sociologists found that if you were picked on some for your faith, it actually made you more likely to remain a believer. And then there the role of youth groups. Youth groups had very little effect if it was just a youth group that you went to and had fun and ate pizza and so on. But if they were youth groups that helped parents and kids stay connected, and parents had some involvement, then youth groups had a larger impact on whether the young people remained in the faith as adults. And then there were some factors which the researchers thought might have significant impact, but were surprised in some cases to find out that they had very little measurable impact, at least, on whether a person would remain a person of faith or not. One thing that had little impact was how much stuff you're into. You can go to various religious activities every night of the week, had almost no impact. The other things we've talked about had much more impact than how often you showed up for this, that, and the other thing. Another one that had very little impact on whether teens would remain people of faith was mission trips during their teen years. Whatever benefit a mission trip might have, it does not make a teen more likely to remain a believer in their grown-up years, according to a vast amount of social research on the matter. Another one that had very little impact was whether they attended a religious high school. That did not. There may be much value in high school education from a Christian perspective, but one thing it didn't do, it seems, was make students more likely to remain Christians as adults. It may have made them more informed Christians, it may have had other impacts, but the things measured in this survey, it did not make them more likely to be a believer as an adult. And here's another thing that's interesting. Some churches feel that they need to really cater to the teenagers, to hang on to them and to help them remain Christians. They've got to keep life really a really teen-focused church. Something that had almost no impact was the expectation of a teen that they wanted to attend a similar church when they got to be the age of 25. So churches might be making a mistake if they say, you know, the way to hang on to our kids is to send them on gobs of mission trips and to make our church a really happening place for teens. You might lure teens away from a different church and hang on to them temporarily, but you're not going to be making them more likely to remain believers as adults. This is based on the research among thousands and thousands of teens, so it ought to be taken seriously when we're considering the real meaning of train up a child in the way he should go. How do you train him? What works? What seems not to have much impact? You can plow thousands upon thousands upon thousands of dollars into certain kinds of activity which are found to have very little impact on their likelihood of being committed to Christ as adults. The research also found a few myths that are worth highlighting. One myth is that parents of teens are irrelevant. And sometimes parents can feel that way. They say, man, it doesn't matter what we do. There's so many other inputs. There's the media. There's the society in general. There's their friends. There's so many other influences on kids. It doesn't matter what we do. And the research finds, yes, it does. In fact, Christian Smith, the head of the research project, said, the good news is that kids take after their parents. The bad news is that kids take after their parents. So it's certainly not that parents are irrelevant. It's that parents are still the single biggest influence in the life of their children, despite all the other influences. Another myth is that going to college undermines faith. And according to Christian Smith, at least, there was a time when social research found that to be true, when college tended to undermine faith, but he says that's no longer the case. Those, in fact, who go to college are more likely to be committed Christians as adults. And many colleges, even on secular campuses, have had very lively Christian groups, and Christians have had their faith tested there, and they've come out of college stronger rather than weaker. There are others who do lose their faith in college, but very often it was not a very strong faith to begin with. But overall, the social research finds that on average, going to college does not undermine faith. It once may have, it usually doesn't anymore. A third myth is that inner spiritual life can still thrive apart from outward religious practices. The popular way of saying is, I'm spiritual but not religious. But when the survey was done of these teens, it found that those who weren't involved in religious practices such as prayer or church attendance or involvement didn't have much of a personal spiritual life either. There were exceptions, but overall, it's a myth that spiritual life does great even when you're not doing anything else with other people who share the faith. So it's important to see what are the things that help teens to remain and become Christian and still have a faith as adults, and also to see some misconceptions that are common beliefs but just aren't so. If you're a child, it's important to realize that the vast majority of young adults who have committed their lives to God did so before age 14. After age 14, it becomes much less likely for people to make a faith commitment and stick with it. And again, that's worth knowing, because in some churches, they don't really expect or call for a commitment before kids get older. And they say, well, they really shouldn't make that big a commitment till they're 17, 18, 20. The fact of the matter is that most of the significant commitments in people's lives happen before they're age 14. And it's also found that of those leaving the faith, 89% of them were not strongly committed even as a child. It's very rare for someone with strong commitment as a child to later leave the faith. So that means the gospel is urgent for kids who are in church. That kids, youth who are listening to the gospel shouldn't just say, well, maybe later. The longer they hear the gospel and don't respond to it by commitment, the less likely it is that they will ever do so. It also means, as I've said already, that parents are huge, and Christian Smith says that. Parents are huge, absolutely huge, nearly a necessary condition. Without question, the most important pastor a child will ever have in their life is a parent. So if you're a mom or dad, don't say to yourself, oh, I think the youth director will take care of my kids' faith, or I think our pastor will, or I'll send them to a religious school. You are the one who will ultimately answer, first of all, to God. And as we've already said, this does not mean that if you're a godly parent who does a great job, there's a 100% promise and guarantee that your children will be believers. But the proverb generalizes, train up a child in the way he should go, and when he's old, he will not depart from it. That is what will happen most of the time, and the social research supports that conclusion.